Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Welcome to another episode of the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I am your host, John Lossoff. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
I have done a lot of data wrangling, and I've compiled a lot of nonsensical and empirical data, and I figured out that Triple X, The Return of Xander Cage, is going to get a 36% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
36%. Wow, that's actually a lot higher than I thought.
Here's how I did it.
All right.
Okay. I got Vin Diesel's like standalone action film. So all of his dorky Last Witch Hunter, Pitch Black, none of the Fast movies. Then I compiled DJ Caruso's wide releases films, films that were widely released. Then I got the average of movies with jet ski action scenes because there's a dirt bike jet bike action scene in this or whatever they're called.
Yeah.
And then I also got the third movies in action film trilogies.
So did you just kind of start with the number 100 and you just kind of took off for all these things?
Yeah, the data came out to 30.8. But I'm like, you know what? His highest like standalone film is Riddick, and that was the third in a trilogy. So it should be 30.8. However, I give it a 5-point bump, boosted it up, you know, 0.2, 36%.
You know, I fully agree with your assessment. I think the movie is definitely going to be, it's going to feel like a 30-something percent Rotten Tomato-wise, but I'm actually looking forward to it because the first Triple X movie, it was just, I think it just didn't make any qualms about what it was. It was just like a straight-up action vehicle for Vin Diesel. Triple X 2 was awkward because Vin Diesel didn't want to do it.
And then I think there was a tank on a boat.
Yeah, I'm like, okay. And then you have this one where Vin Diesel's back, but I think Ice Cube is also in it too. So I'm just like, you know, I've seen the first two. I might as well just complete the trilogy.
Like, he dirt bikes on the ocean, and he skis down a forested hill that has no snow on it.
Sure, why not?
Like, I want movies like that to succeed.
You know, it says up front in the title, Triple X, like, what are you expecting? Well, exactly. I mean, I know what some people are expecting, but still, it's a straight up pure action movie, even more ridiculous than the Fast and Furious movies. And there's definitely an audience like you and me that appreciates movies like these. And like, yeah, I think it's going to be like a 30-something percent movie, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, you know.
And like, I don't think you can judge it like you can't criticize it like other films. You can say it's bad, but when you're watching, say, Manchester by the Sea and Triple X on the same day, you can't be like, you know, you got to watch them totally differently.
Wow, that'd be a great doubleheader.
Holy crap!
It's like, which one do you watch first?
I'd have to watch. Oh man, you know, knowing how like terrible but amazing I felt after Manchester by the Sea, I wouldn't want that wrecked by Triple X. So I would do Triple X and Manchester.
Really? Wow.
Because I don't want that. I had a, you know, Manchester by the Sea didn't like, it's not manipulative and it gets you, but it's not, it's heartbreaking, but it's not, you leave feeling not like you got hit by a truck. Like you have a, I just watched a great film feeling.
Yeah.
Right. But so let's see, you're feeling high, you're flying high from Manchester by the Sea, and then you watch a shirtless Vin Diesel ride around on a dirt bike on the ocean.
Oh, man. It just all ties together. I could just
find Manchester by the Sea, Triple X on the Sea.
Yeah. Maybe like towards the end of the movie, you see Vin Diesel jet skiing across the Manchester by the Sea.
Just doing a wheelie.
Like, up yours, Casey Affleck.
He's like, on the back of the dirt bike, man, riding with Vin.
Casey Affleck's bad day just got even worse. Like, oh man. That's a mashup I want to see. All right. Awesome. Okay. I think it's I think that's enough XXX Manchester by Sea talk. All right. I think it's time to start the podcast like we usually do with listener questions. Mark, I think you have the questions for us this week.
Yep. The first question comes from Danny, and he asks, Celebrity Hunger Games is down to the final three tributes, Orlando Bloom, Russell Crowe, and Tom Cruise. Who takes it?
I feel like this question was kind of rigged against Orlando Bloom. You know, so I mean my first choice is kind of obvious, but I think I'm gonna try to justify Orlando Bloom for the answer.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay. Oh, damn it.
I was like, if it's Orlando Bloom's, like, I think I broke down the math and he's killed the most people in the 21st century. Between Legolas, Pirates of the Caribbean, Kingdom of Heaven, he's murdered a lot of people and creatures and monsters. Sure. So he's killed more on screen than Tom Cruise or Russell Crowe. However, if he got into a fist fight with Russell Crowe, would it be all over?
No. I think if he got in the fight with Russell Crowe, Orlando Bloom would pull a Joaquin Phoenix. And he'd be like, he just gets stabbed by Russell Crowe. I think Orlando Bloom, like, he would just play keep away, you know. Yeah. He just kind of run around the edge, like, just like just shooting like bows and arrows against him and Tom Cruise. Now Tom Cruise, like, he's kind of wily, you know.
He would just take it too seriously, and he seems kind of nice.
Yeah. I don't know what to expect with Tom Cruise. Like, he is totally unpredictable. You know, you don't know what character he's gonna be. Maybe he'll be in Ethan Hunt. Or maybe he'll be his character from Edge of Tomorrow, where it doesn't matter how many times you kill him.
Yeah.
He just keeps coming back. Oh. Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to justify Orlando Bloom, but I think Tom Cruise has to get the nod here.
See,
you know?
I think Orlando Bloom would just fall asleep somewhere. And Tom Cruise would be like, I'm going to build a booby trap. Ha ha. Build a booby trap, but he's never built a booby trap in his life. So he would build like this pretty baller booby trap, but he'd get stuck in it.
Right.
That would be his end. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Russell Crowe, I feel like he would just get like totally wasted before the fight and forget to show up.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, he would just be in a stupor.
Right.
But if he hit you once.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think like Orlando would just kind of have to keep him on keep him like 30 yards away from him at all times.
Yeah. Okay.
You know what I mean?
So I'm going to go over Orlando Bloom, but on two conditions. Russell Crowe doesn't show up due to him being wasted and Tom Cruise falling into one of the booby traps that he set.
Yeah.
So that way Orlando Bloom wins by default.
Yes.
Okay. There we go.
So he's just sleeping somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or maybe Tom Cruise sets up while he's finishing the booby trap, a drunken Russell Crowe walks into it and just blows them both up.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So either way, Orlando Bloom wins by default. Like, he doesn't actually have to fight the other two.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah.
I think the Bloomers got it.
Yeah. I think you have to go Orlando Bloom.
Yep.
All right.
Did we answer that? Crap.
No, kind of. Yeah, I think we did, actually.
That was pretty definitive.
I think we answered it definitively in a very roundabout way.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, I think there was definitely we went through a couple different answers before we settled on Orlando Bloom. So I think it was still pretty vague.
Yeah, because I kind of think Tom Cruise could pull it out.
Yeah, but then again, I still think Russell Crowe could probably pull it out too.
Yeah. See.
So actually, yeah, I don't know. I feel like a lot of these listeners' questions, like, we should just say it up front. Like, yeah, I don't know. You probably save so much time. It's like, you know what? I have no idea. You know?
Yeah, there'll be no answer.
Okay. Thank you, Danny, for that wonderful listener question. We didn't give you a answer. We gave you three answers, which really we didn't answer it at all, if you think about it.
I feel like Benicio Del Toro would just pop out of nowhere and win it all.
Oh, yeah. You know, he's got that wily look. He's got that wild look about him. I wouldn't put anything past him. I'm like, dude, you weren't even invited. I know. Element of surprise. Element of surprise.
Wait, but there is no surprise because we didn't want you here.
That doesn't really apply here, Benicio. Like, I don't care.
You know who would do it is Johnny Knoxville.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Actually, yo, in a straight up fight between Johnny Knoxville and anybody, I'd put money on Johnny Knoxville. Not because like he's like stronger or faster, but just because he could just take punches like no one else.
And he'd be laughing about it.
Yeah.
I want a movie like Roadrunner and Coyote where Tom Cruise is just trying to blow up Johnny Knoxville.
So is that the final answer? Johnny Knoxville going up against Tom Cruise, Roadrunner style?
Yes.
It's Wally Coyote.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. All right. No, there's the real final answer. That was the real final answer.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Knoxville in a Roadrunner cartoon. All right. I think it's time to move on to the topic of the day, which is the best movies of 2016 that we didn't see. You know, 2016 was a really great year for movies. I think we talked a little bit about the best movies, what we thought was the best movies. We're probably going to delve in a future episode more about what we thought was the top movies. The problem is that there were a ton of movies that came out. And
like little ones.
Yeah,
like
little ones.
2016 was like the year of the independent film. A lot of people are bagging on the blockbusters, but when you look at the lineup of 2016, there's going to be a lot of movies that are still lingering around
15 years
from now.
There's like all these great little indie movies that came out. And the problem is that, like, you know, people these days, like, you only have so much time to watch like all these movies, like, because it's not just movies. There's also TV shows on Netflix and also books or in video games. And it's just like there's so many things competing for your time and attention. It's just like, OK, you know, trying to catch up on all the best movies 2016. That's a tough task. And it's even tougher because, like, as Mark said, a lot of the best movies from 2016, there were smaller movies, and a lot of these smaller movies, they didn't have wide releases, so it can be kind of hard to catch them. And if they were released nationwide, like, they were only in theaters for, like, a minute.
Yeah, you blink, you miss it.
Yeah, like, you know, there were some movies I wanted to see, and then, like, you know, I turn around, like, it's already gone. Like, really?
I live in the suburbs outside of Atlanta, about 40 minutes. So when there's like a movie only screening in like an Atlanta Midtown art cinema, mm-hmm. I basically got to like book a plane ticket.
Yeah, because like it's the only place and only time you can see that movie.
Yeah, and I don't want to, you know, I have to drive down there for work. I don't want to drive back.
Yeah, yeah. What do you mean Civil War is only playing this week? Yeah, okay. So I think what we're going to do, Mark and I think we're going to just kind of go down the list that may or may not be in Rotten Tomatoes of kind of like the most critically acclaimed movies that we didn't see. Mark and I will just kind of take turns like rattling off movies. If one of us has seen the movie, we'll explain. We'll talk about the movie. We'll explain why we liked it or didn't like it. And if we both didn't see it, we'll both just kind of guess as to how the movie was, you know?
Yeah, make some predictions.
Sure, sure. Okay, I think I'll start off first.
Okay. All right.
Let's see. So one of the best movies of 2016 that I didn't see is Moonlight.
Mm.
Yeah. When it originally came out, like, I just kind of heard about it. Like, it got, like, some good buzz out of, like, the indie film festivals. But it seems like there's always a bunch of movies that are always getting good buzz out of indie film festivals. So it's like, it just barely made a blip on my radar. But then, like, you know, it was already gone from theaters. I'm just like, well, okay. It was only in theaters for, like, a couple weeks, you know, down here where I live. But then, like, you know, the Golden Globes comes around and it wins, like, Best Picture. I'm like, oh, okay. I guess I have to see this movie now.
And that's how I watched it, because it won the Golden Globe and it got released. And I was kind of skeptical because I watched La La Land and that has like a massive push behind it.
Sure.
And I liked it, but I didn't love it. Maybe I'm just a cynical bastard. But then I went and watched Moonlight. And I'm like, I hope it lives up to the hype. And it does.
Really?
So that's my one word. It lives up to the hype.
Oh, so you're just making me feel that much worse.
Yeah, it's like, it's really well. And it's by FSU grad. So we like that.
Go Noles.
And yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, it's interesting. Mahershala Ali, he's getting all this buzz, but I think Naomi Harris puts in the best performance. I won't give anything away, sure. But it's really good, man. It's
wow.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. I really want to see this movie now.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's good.
Dang it! It just felt like it just came out of nowhere, right? Like,
basically.
Yeah. Okay. Dang it. All right, Mark. So what was your what's your pick for best movie 2016 that you didn't see?
Jackie
with Natalie Portman. I haven't seen that one either. Yeah, actually.
Yeah, I mean, like, she plays Jackie O. And at first when I saw it, I was like, oh brother, like another great actress adopting an accent and then wandering around for 2 hours in a movie with one word in its title, like Ray, Lincoln, Nixon.
Sure. Okay.
You know, Gandhi. Like all these movies, like, you know, there's these great biopics, but you just watch them once.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't want to watch Lincoln again.
No.
Right. And yeah. So, but then like I saw the trailer for Jackie and I heard all the buzz that, Natalie Portman was getting, and it looks like a trippy kind of visceral, really well-made depressing indie that I'll watch once.
Yeah, I've seen the trailer. I kind of want to watch it, but at the same time, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
it just, you know, I get it. She's an important figure in American history. You know, she was the wife of JFK. But at the same time, it's just like, yeah, I don't know. I never really cared all that much about Jackie Kennedy. It's not really. I know. I'm a terrible, terrible person. But I think, you know, it. I kind of do want to see it because it feels like it's been a while since I've seen Natalie Portman like really got a chance to like kind of bust her acting chops.
Like Black Swan, right?
Yeah, Black Swan. I think that was like the last movie I saw where it's just like I got to see her act because like what she was in both Thor movies. I'm just like, well, that's great.
She was wasted in those.
Yeah.
Not drunk. She wasn't drunk in them.
Yeah.
They just didn't use her acting chops the best.
Sure. Okay, so.
Sure. Wait, are you insinuating?
Yeah, no, I'm not insinuating anything.
She was wasted during those?
No, not at all. I would never.
But like this Jackie, though, it's like when I first heard her like voice and I was like, oh, brother. Like, yeah. I was like, I don't want to, you know, I don't know. But then the trailer played on and I was like, it's by the guy who directed the film. No. So the dude has a lot of talent.
Yeah.
But it just seems like a movie you'll watch once. And then you'd be like, yeah, that was good.
Yeah. Okay, right? So it's a biopic, but it doesn't like delve like through her entire life. It covers like the assassination.
Yeah, like after
I don't know.
Yeah, so yeah, after the assassination and how she like deals with it.
Yeah, I mean that's what we're thinking. I don't know. None of us have seen the movie, so we're just kind of guessing here.
Yeah, and then it's just her acting. You know, it's just Natalie Portman just acting her face off.
And go ahead.
I'm a little worried though. Like, you know, in movies where people are acting, does that make sense?
Yeah, like it's just like I'm going to use like Manchester by the Sea as the anti-example. It's like Casey Affleck is getting like all these like. You know, critical acclaim because like there's like a great way to I read that like really describe like Casey Affleck's acting in Manchester by the Sea. Like you didn't see Casey Affleck, you just saw Lee Chandler, you know? Whereas like in other movies, it's like, well, you don't see so and so's character, you just see so and so. You know? I totally agree.
Yeah, like I think my favorite performances are really performances that they don't feel actory. Like I watched Southpaw the other day with Jake Gyllenhaal. Mm-hmm. I just put on his background, and it was just him acting the whole time. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Like you see him like putting like 110% into the performance, but at the same time, it's like it's fucking Donnie Darko, man. Yeah.
Like, have you ever seen like Brendan Gleeson? Mm-hmm. Like, does he ever seem like he's trying to act?
No, like he just kind of he just kind of disappears in the character.
Yeah,
I feel like,
right?
Yeah,
and he's not like doing a bit, like he's acting, like, but you don't really feel like he's. What's that on Forgetting Sarah Marshall where he's like, the way to surf is you can't like try.
Oh, with Paul Rudd.
Yeah, and then like he's like, you're trying too hard, and then Jason Segel just lays there. He's like, well, you got to get up. It's like you obviously have to like act,
right?
But like you don't have to like. Act.
It's just some people make it seem effortless, you know.
Like, but in these biopics, they're I feel like maybe that's why they annoy me is everyone's always acting.
Yeah, you know, I think it would be super interesting, if Wes Anderson made a biopic.
Oh my goodness!
Because all of his characters are just like, for the most part, they're low key. What if he decided to make a biopic of like a really larger than life character?
Freddie Mercury or something? Or like Genghis Khan?
Yeah, a Wes Anderson biopic of Genghis Khan. I think I want to see this movie so bad.
And like for some reason, it would be Owen Wilson.
No, Bill Murray plays Genghis Khan.
Riding on a horse.
Yeah. There's like the... Oh man. And when they're like raping and pillaging, it's just like it's done in like the most quirky like montage ever.
Like, because there is a lot of violence in Wes Anderson's films. Like, people get stabbed, dogs get murdered, people get stabbed.
Yeah.
Like Grand Budapest Hotel, like fingers get sliced off.
Yeah.
So like he has no problem hurting people. Like Bill Murray would just be walking around with that big sword. And just wiping people out, riding a horse with a big mustache.
I think I want to see this movie. I really want to see this movie.
I want a Bill Murray Genghis Khan biopic.
Yeah. Okay, so you're saying that from the trailer, it looks like Natalie Portman's doing a lot of acting, not necessarily like effortless acting.
But she's a good actress. So yeah. I feel like her, in my mind, I'm visualizing acting. But I think she nails it in it. I don't think she turns in. I think this is like the no BS NP.
Okay.
You know, I think in this movie, she acts her face off and we don't really realize her acting. And then we buy into the character.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I'll see it just because like I said, I've never had an interest in Jackie Kennedy. But I think that could be a plus because I'll be going to the movie blind. Like I don't have any expectations of the character other than the fact that, well, she was married to JFK. So maybe that'll be better from a movie viewing experience. Okay. You know what? I think I kind of talked myself into watching the movie. I wasn't really too keen on it before, but I think I'm going to check it out.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the costume and you know, the costumes are going to look great.
Sure.
Like the cinematography looks nice.
Yeah.
Like it looks like a good movie, but it looks like one that, you know, I'll watch eventually.
Yeah. Same here. I'll Redbox it.
There we go.
Okay.
Redbox Jackie?
Yeah. It sounds dirty.
But I equate Redboxing for me is kind of like renting like Independence Day 2.
You know what's like something I do? It's like really kind of funny now that I think about it. But like whenever I see like a movie trailer and it's just like, oh, yeah, like I'm totally going to Redbox that movie. And then when I'm at the Redbox and I see that movie, I'm just like... I don't know if I still want to see it. And I'm just like, I mean, I said I would Redbox it, but I never thought I'd be here.
And you end up with like the mechanic too.
It's like, you know, when people say, like, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. Like, well, we're at the bridge now. I'm like, oh, damn it.
What? Do I really want to cross it?
I totally didn't think about it the whole time. So.
You know, that's really bad planning. Like, yeah, we'll cross it when we get there. But it's kind of like.
Okay.
Will we?
But what are we going to do when we get there? I'm just like, I'll let you know. So, okay. I think we have time for one more before we go on the break. It's my turn.
Yeah.
One of the best movies of 2016 that I didn't see was Hunt for the Wilder People. This is a movie that's gotten a lot of really good word of mouth. Like, it's it stars Sam Neill. I think it's directed by the guy who's going to be doing Thor 3. Am I correct?
Yeah, Taika Waititi, who did What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah, it's a family film, right? I guess.
It's violent. There's death.
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah, like it's wow. Like so folks die. Like it's violent. It's grumpy. But I think every kid should watch. Like I think every teenager should watch it.
You know what's funny is that like I'm looking at the movie description tags and it's like action adventure comedy. It just like. I see Sam Neill and this kid. I'm just like, it looks like a family movie.
Dude, the kid in that movie is amazing. Like, I love that. Like, I love this movie. Like, that's my favorite song of the year aside from Sing Street. She like, so this kid, he's an orphan and he goes to this house. Is like in the country is like a last ditch. No, he's not an orphan, but he's gone through the foster system in New Zealand. And his last ditch result is to go to this house in the country. And this woman there is just really nice, and her husband's grumpy Sam Neill. But she makes him this little song on a piano, and she's like, Ricky Baker, ooh, ooh. And it's like this cheeky song, but he like is this kid who's never had a song in his life, and he's like loving it that she made this song for him.
Yeah.
And it just breaks your heart. And then just – I think one of my top 10 lines of the year, I'm not going to give anything away, but is when Ricky Baker goes – this guy goes, what's behind door 3? And then Ricky Baker goes, vegetables? And then the guy, and then the guy goes, no! Just, you gotta see it, but
I think this is one of those movies where it's like I didn't hear anything about it till way after the fact. Like, I think I'm not even sure it even got released in theaters down here where I live. I'm just like, I think it's available on Amazon streaming and YouTube or you know whatever. So I think I can watch it that way. But I'm just like, yeah, it's not one of these like these small indie movies that's just like. That really dominated 2016.
And Empire Magazine said it was the number one film of 2016. So Empire Magazine is my favorite movie magazine on the planet. And all their staff writers, they put together the top 10 list and then compiled and gave points. And the number one film of 2016 was Hunt for the Wilder People.
Okay. If I wasn't convinced before, I'm definitely convinced now. Yeah, it's another one of these indie movies where it's just like I didn't hear anything about until everybody has seen it already. I'm just like, oh, come on. You know, I'm busy with like watching Civil War and Doctor Strange. You know, I should have been watching the real movies.
It's adorable. I loved it, man.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, you've made a very convincing argument for me to watch Hunt for the Wilder People.
Thank you.
I think I will try to look for it. But in the meantime, I think now's a good time to take a break. So we'll see you guys in a little bit.
We're not going to watch any movies.
Robert.
Mm-hmm.
John.
Yes.
Complete the sequence.
Mm-hmm.
5, 4.
3, 2, 1.
What are we doing?
Counting.
Counting what?
Down?
Counting down what?
Everything? Everything and anything.
Anything and everything?
That's right. The three of us, we count down from 5 down to 1. Top 5, everything and anything that you can think of. You want to know the top 5 shittiest bands? You want to know the top 5 movies? Listen, Shark Dropper Studios, sharkdropper.com.
Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I didn't find Hunt for the Wilder People. Well, that's because I wasn't looking for it. I ended up going to Domino's.com and ordering a pizza.
Did you have them look for them on the way?
No, I just had them put on extra pepperoni. So, yeah.
Well, if you watch Hunt for the Wilder People, you'll get that pepperoni joke.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Really? Wow.
I think you just set yourself up for a joke you didn't know you're setting yourself up for.
Wait, was there really a pepperoni joke in 100 Widow People?
If you watch it, you'll get it.
Okay. What if I watch it like the whole time I'm waiting for the pepperoni joke and it just never comes?
There's a chance you might not get it because this is really obscure.
You're telling me
but you went to college for deductive reasoning, didn't you?
Yeah, I think. You know what? I don't know.
You have to consider it?
Yeah. Okay. No, all right. I'll watch the movie, and I'll try to keep, I'll try to listen for the really obscure pepperoni joke and hunt for the older people.
I mean, it's obscure.
It's so obscure.
Basically, you blink and you miss it.
Okay. It's like a lot of movies that I missed in 2016.
That's right.
Okay. I think we have another listener question, right, Mark? Yeah,
and this one is Bogart's Rick Blaine from Casablanca classically cool because of or in spite of his rampant cigarette smoking and brandy consumption? Why?
I think...
So...
Oh, go ahead, Mark.
Oh, no, you got it. You got it.
I think it wasn't the fact that he was, like, smoking and drinking that made it cool. It was the fact that he was smoking and drinking that made it look cool. Like Humphrey Bogart himself. Like, it was just like, he just had like a certain, there was like a certain classically manly way of smoking and drinking. And he just kind of nailed that. Yeah. You know, it's just, you watch like these movies from like the old days and you see like all these guys like just kind of go about their business. And it's just like completely different to modern times, you know? Because back then, like, you know, these guys, like, I think they just drank and smoked more often. They just, like, yeah. You know, it's a completely different style.
It was the 40s, 50s. They didn't know any better.
Sure. It was just like, dude, what's cancer?
I don't think they did, I don't think they did it to be cool. They were just kind of like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right, imagine this, right?
Okay.
Bogart, right? He's in Casablanca, and instead of a cigarette and brandy, he has a very large pita and a frappuccino.
Ugh.
He would still look awesome.
Yeah, he would make it look cool.
Like in the middle of all of his lines while munching on this pita and like drinking his frappuccino, which I have nothing against, man. I'll crush some frappuccinos. It's just been a while. I really can't think of the last time I had one. I got nothing against them.
Yeah, you can't crush frappuccinos like you used to, Mark.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Man, I wish I could tell you the last time I had a frappuccino.
No.
But
you promised your wife you wouldn't do that anymore. You would stay in the straight and narrow.
Like, yeah, absolutely. And like, yeah, I definitely had to stay on the straight and narrow. My frap addiction was insane.
Yeah.
I was doing like six a day and they cost like $4.50 a pop.
Yeah, no, those things aren't cheap.
Like I'd be at work and like, you know, there's cigarette breaks. I had to take frap breaks.
Sure, sure.
Like, and then there was like no rule for it. So like, well, you can't really do it. I'm like, listen, man. This is caffeine. It's an addiction.
No.
And then they're like, all right. So I'd be outside drinking my frap. But no, like Bogey, right? Bogey in Casablanca, right? He's eating like a 18-inch sub. Like you would still think he's the coolest guy on the planet. So yeah. Like if you think about John Travolta smoking in Evil Ways, he looks like a schmuck. Like he doesn't care about smoking. He just wants to look cool because he's smoking. But Bogey, he didn't care. Like that's what he did.
I mean, he probably started smoking at like age 5.
So yeah, like, I'm surprised he didn't have 4 cigarettes in his mouth at one time.
Sure, sure. And like, he's probably been drinking. He was probably drinking like around the same amount of time that he's been smoking. So it's just like, you know, you watch him like smoke and drink and he just looks so, he makes it look so cool because he's probably been doing it his whole life.
It's organic. It's organic drinking and smoking.
Yeah. These days, it's like you gotta watch your health, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I watch myself drink in a mirror. Does that count as watching your carbs and calories?
You could, yeah, you're watching your health go down. So,
yeah. All right, so get this. So, in Leaving Las Vegas, Nicolas Cage plays an alcoholic, and I listened to this podcast where this guy called total BS on it. He's like, "Well, if you're really that much of an alcoholic, you've basically singled out on one thing. You're not going to go through a store picking all different variations. You're going to pick the same thing of one." Isn't that? That's kind of interesting. Depressing, but interesting.
Really? Yeah, I never really thought of it that way before.
like when I had my frap addiction, I wasn't like, hey, give me a cookies and cream, give me a honey creamsicle, you know, give me a blueberry crush. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I was like, give me the mocha frap.
It was always the mocha frap.
That was it. I didn't even get – someone said, hey, we got a seasonal. I go, yeah, you are a seasonal.
Yeah.
You know? I was like, hey, I apologize. I just need my frap.
Yeah, that's – wow, I'd never really considered that before, actually.
Just give me a mocha frap.
All right. Awesome. Okay, so I think that's the I think that's the final answer to that question, the mocha frap.
Yeah, just give me a mocha frap.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for those wonderful listener questions. Keep sending them in, folks. The weirder, the better. We're not going to guarantee that your question will ever get answered. So, but yeah, keep sending them in to Twitter?
At Twitter.
Movies, Homes, Flicks, at the website.
Yep, Movies, Homes, and Flicks, and our website. We get occasional questions. Well, we get a menagerie. That's not it. That's a collection of animals. But yeah, we get a hodgepodge of questions everywhere.
Sure.
So wherever you want. And we guys, you've listened to these questions. Like all y'all have listened to these random answers. So if there's something that pops in your head one day, just shoot it over to us and we won't answer it.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll be happy to not enlighten you.
Like I'll even do a lot of research to not answer it.
Yeah. We'll do everything but answer the question. So
just give me my frap.
Yeah. Okay. Back to the topic. The best movies of 2016 that we didn't see. Mark, I think it's your turn.
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of Korean cinema, and this year I was lucky enough to watch Train to Busan, which is very, very, very good. Very good. Then I watched The Wailing, which is very, 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 very good, but it's essentially a punch to the face like every 3 minutes, followed by not getting my fraps for about 6 weeks.
Oh, no.
Like, it's a rough experience, but The Wailing's the best. They're the best two horror films of this of 2016. I know we're in 2017 now. But they were amazing. However, The Wailing is 2 hours and 40 minutes. And I don't have that much free time. So a lot of times I'm able to maybe put on a movie in the background. But with this one, you know, The Wailing, I had to focus on it for 2 hours and 40 minutes of just sheer absolute soul destruction. And I missed. So Park Chan-wook, who did Old Boy, which I think you gave me, Lazvath, way back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
He directed a movie called The Handmaiden, which is about it's in the 1930s. It's a book adaptation where there's this rich Japanese woman and this younger, poor Korean woman goes to her house and attempt to kind of swindle her. And in if you've watched Thirst, if you've watched a lot of Korean cinema, you know it just gets weird. So this movie, it's. You know, I think it's in the top 20 of Rotten Tomatoes this year, 90-something percent. It looks like an absolute war of attrition, but Park Chan-wook is an amazing director. And this film is one of his more accessible ones, from what I've heard. And just watch the trailer for The Handmaiden, and it just looks beautiful. But you just have to, like, invest yourself into it. Like, this sounds weird, Lazvath, but like I would have gone to the theater to watch this, but it's almost tougher for me to watch it at home.
Really?
Does that make sense? Like, because when you're a theater, you know, you can kind of, you're in there. But when you're home, you have so many other responsibilities that you're kind of all over the place. You can pause it, everything like that. If I knew this was in a theater near my house, I would have watched it as opposed to renting it.
Yeah, because when you're in a theater, you're kind of forced to envelop yourself in the movie. Where you're at home, it's just like there's a very good chance you're going to miss like a small detail and just kind of ruins like the rest of the movie. So I totally understand. You know, what's funny is that like I only heard about this movie after it got released on Netflix. Like it was like a recommended title.
Wait, The Handmaid's on Netflix?
No, The Wailing.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I thought you were talking about The Wailing.
No, I'm talking about The Handmaiden.
Oh, okay.
No, but The Wailing's awesome.
Oh, yeah, The Wailing is like, you know what? I'm not going to talk about The Wailing.
Did you watch The Wailing?
No.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's good. But yeah, Handmaiden, like, it's just, it seems like, oh, hey, it's like these people trying to swindle this Japanese woman, but it gets really weird.
So it's like, is it super violent? Like,
I think it's very, it seems very psychologically, it's like a psychological thriller.
Really?
I think there is violence, but I think it's, I mean, it's a Park Chan-wook movie, so there is definitely violence, but I think it's focused more on, he focuses more on character in this one, and that's what makes me really want to watch it. I don't know. Yeah, so, I don't know. Train to Busan was an easy sell because it's just zombies on a train, but Handmaiden, like a 2-hour, 40-minute epic involving people trying to swindle a Japanese woman in the 1930s. I mean, that sounds great for me, but, you know.
Yeah. Okay. I'll definitely check it out. I guess it's not on Netflix. So.
No, I can't even. I don't even know where to rent. I think it went in theaters, but you can't rent it.
Right. Okay. I will keep an eye out for it. Okay. Awesome. My turn. The next movie that was amazing that I didn't see was The Edge of 17.
Hey, I had that on my list too.
Really? Awesome.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I haven't watched it, but I love it.
Yeah, same here. It's like I remember seeing a trailer. It's like, oh, it's another coming of age teen movie starring you know, Hailee Steinfeld. She's a good actress. I'm just like, yeah, this trailer looks really good. And I never got around to seeing it. But it got like really good reviews. I'm just like, I felt good for the movie. You know, I was happy for the movie. Like, yeah, you got good reviews. Like, I didn't get a chance to see you when you were in theaters, but you know, I don't think you needed me to see you. You know?
And it didn't do well. And everyone's like, oh, this is the next Mean Girls. This is the next that. And then it tanked.
Yeah.
And it made me like it even more because it's like, yo, people underestimated you.
Even though I haven't seen you.
Yeah. But like, I feel like you're good. And I don't like that people didn't watch you because you're supposedly, you know, clueless.
Yeah. So the movie's sitting at an amazing 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. The audience score is at 87%.
Wow. 87? That's high.
Yeah, for the audience score, for I think the problem is that like a lot of people have like a very strong idea of what a coming of age teen movie is, because like there's been so many classics in that genre. It's just like when they see a trailer for that, they're instantly reminded of all these other movies. So it's just like when they see the trailer, they're already like psyching themselves out of seeing the movie. Like they're thinking of like other movies. So I think that's kind of like the problem of doing like coming of age teen movies. It's just like there's been like so many great movies like in the genre. It's hard to stand out, you know?
Yeah, and then like for me, like when people are like, "Oh, it's like Clueless meets Mean Girls," I'm like, "Shut up!"
Yeah,
like can't you just say, "Hey, it's a really good film"?
Yeah. Okay. So you and I haven't seen it.
But there's this great line in the preview where she's like, she accidentally sends this text to this guy. I don't know what grade she's in. Maybe she's a senior. I don't know. Mm. In high school. And she sends like this text about how she wants to like sit on him, like have sex with him in like a Burger King freezer. And she accidentally sends it to the guy. And then she reads it to Woody Harrelson. She's like, "What do you think?" And then Woody Harrelson's like, "Well, it was a bit of a run-on sentence." Like, because Woody Harrelson's like the sassy teacher.
You know, it just, for some reason, like, when you said Woody Harrelson, it made me think of, like, scumbag characters. It made me think of another coming-of-age movie that got criminally underrated was Adventureland, because Ryan Reynolds also played, like, kind of a scumbag-like character.
Oh, yeah, he was a skeezball. He was kind of a self-aware, sad skeezball. Yeah.
It's just, like, it made me realize just now that some of the best coming-of-age movies were the ones that went under the radar, that were totally underrated. You know?
And like, you know why? Because I feel like the real corporate ones,
yeah,
you know, people like them, but the ones that go under the radar and develop a cult audience, I think those are like the best coming of age films.
It's like they're the ones that have to, like, they know that there's like a lot of great movies in the genre and they kind of have to go against the grain in order to stand out, and that's what they do. But at the same time, it's like you're kind of, alienating the mainstream audience. So a lot of times these movies kind of go unseen.
Yeah. You know what's funny? Like today I was just thinking, when's this going to be on Redbox?
Yeah.
Right? If I knew this was on Redbox right now, I'm going to fall asleep after this. But tomorrow I'll rent it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I already like this movie.
No, yeah, I totally agree. Like, I've already decided, like, I like this movie. I'm going to watch it at some point.
I don't think it's going to be, in my mind, I don't see it being a classic for so I haven't built it up to mythical proportions.
Sure.
Like, you know, people do that sometimes. Like, so my favorite film of 2016 was Everybody Wants Some. Yeah. And I've been telling a lot of people, hey, you know, it's my favorite film. And I've told a lot of people, I don't think it's the best film, but it's my favorite. So some people watched it, you know, recently, and I was like, what'd you think? They're like, well, you just built it up so much. It was overrated. And I was like, no. Like, so I'm not trying to overrate the edges. And whoever said that, I'm pretty sure they listen to the podcast and they're pissed at me now. But listen, you know, like I haven't overrated The Edge of 17 yet. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Although I do want to say, Mark, that like you did kind of, I have like heard you rave about the movie, and when I saw it, I definitely didn't feel like you built it. You overhyped it. I think you did like the right amount of hyping, because I also love that movie.
Dude, Everybody Wants Some. It's just, I think people don't know how hard it was to make that film, because the acting is so natural. There's good laughs. There's good characters. There's character development, and it takes place in 3 days.
You know what? What that movie also was. It was an underrated coming of age movie.
That's right.
Yeah.
Like Linklater knows what's up. Like that movie looks relaxed, but to make it that relaxed is really hard.
Yeah. I think the proper way to sell this movie, it's the spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused.
Yeah.
You know?
It's perfect. Yeah. Just hanging out.
Hey, just hanging out. Playing baseball. Chilling.
Talking Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Putting cats in refrigerators.
I will say that, like, Everybody Wants Some. Because up until then, like, the Big Brother from Sing Street was my favorite movie character from 2016. Mm-hmm. Then I saw Everybody Wants Some. It was like, no. I got to give it to Finnegan. Like, he was definitely my favorite movie character. It was just like, he was like the perfect mix of cockiness and intelligence and kind of cool, charming bro that you just want to have I want to have a drink with everybody, like of all the characters from this movie, but especially Finnegan. Like, he was just like, dude, I just want to have a drink with you and just get wasted and just have like a life altering conversation with you. You know, it was beautiful.
Yeah. Like, dude. Yeah. So Glenn Powell's Finnegan and Kate Beckinsale in Love and Friendship are my favorite characters of 2016. Sure. Like, I've watched Everybody Wants Him, I think, 6 times already.
Yeah. It's a good movie.
Love it.
Yeah. So Edge of 17. Great movie that we're going to watch.
Yeah, great film that reminded us of other films. And you know, it's so good, Edge of 17. We haven't highly overrated it yet.
Sure.
In our minds.
Yeah, no. I'm totally psyched for it, but not in an overly ambitious way.
Yeah, exactly. Like, hey, I'm going to watch it. I'm going to enjoy it, but I don't think it's going to change my life.
No.
Because it's about a 17-year-old girl.
How can I relate to that?
Maybe the teacher.
Yeah. Although I will say, I know this is kind of random sounding. When I saw Everybody Wants Some, like after when the credits start rolling, I literally said to myself, that was such a Mark movie. You know? Like, it was such a Mark movie.
Really?
Yeah. It was just so? Like...
Do you have like a 10 second?
It was just like the characters, like they were all just kind of, they were just trying to get laid. They're always drinking, but they're also having like these profound conversations. I'm just like if Mark was alive, or like if Mark grew up during that time and he went to that school, like he would be in that group. Like he would fit in like so well. Like I can see you with the mullet. I can see you with the mustache. I can see you with the short shorts, unfortunately. So, yeah.
Dude, I'd have been in those. I'd have been country line dancing. I'd have been discoing. Like, I would have had no problem going to three different, like, hanging out with punks, hanging out at country. I'd have gone all of them. And good. I did for a while tragically smoke a pipe in college.
Sure.
Like, but then one night I got into like a long conversation with some people for like 5 hours. Yeah. And I smoked that pipe for like 5 hours, and then my mouth the next day felt like, you know, it was,
yeah,
it was dead.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. So that was Edge of 17.
Yeah.
Mark, what's the next movie you got?
Okay, L by Paul Verhoeven. And so Isabelle Huppert, she recently won the Golden Globe for Best Actress. And Paul Verhoeven, if you don't know, directed Starship Troopers, RoboCop, Showgirls, Black Book. And this movie is about this woman who's like, she's the boss of this video game company. Total kind of hard-ass, you know, rough. You know, like, people always make fun of, like, you know, there's like that stigma where if a guy is like hardball, he's like a boss. But if a woman's kind of hardball, she's, you know, I don't know if I got myself in trouble with this. But, like, you know, that stigma where like a woman is like really sure of herself and like, oh, yeah, she's mean. But yeah, so she's like this like real tough businesswoman. But one night she goes home and there's a guy there and he sexually assaults her. So the rest of this film is about her like trying to find this guy who sexually assaulted her and get revenge. But then they get into like this weird relationship.
Whoa, really?
Like, but that's all I know about it. But it's, you know, up for best foreign language film. She won best actress. She beat out, you know, Meryl Streep. She's you know, pulled some massive upsets. And everyone's kind of – she's won the most awards of 2016, now rolling into 2017. And this is a movie by the guy who directed Starship Troopers. And which a lot of people say is a satire. But they're saying this movie is like really unexpected. It's weird. You don't know where it's going. You think this woman's going for like this revenge, but then she gets into this weird thing with him. And like then, but she's like this real powerful woman that she worked with in her job, but then she has this really weird relationship. But like, I don't know. That just seems like the kind of like I love a comeback story, Paul Verhoeven. I love that he's still making movies and relevant today. I like that movie. You know, I like foreign films that sort of twist things on their head. So in this case, they're like the revenge that becomes something different. So this movie's like kind of perfect for me to watch and like. I haven't watched it, but I like it.
Yeah. I'll be honest, man. This movie sounds intense. Because I haven't seen like a trailer. I didn't read a plot synopsis. And listening to you describe it, I'm just like, wow. Like, I'm just, like, I'm already breaking into a cold sweat. Just trying to imagine the scenes playing out. I'm just like, oh.
And man. I hear it's pretty funny.
Really?
Like, there's humor to it. Like, you know, dark humor, like the lobster type dark humor.
Well, that's kind of part of Verhoeven's style, right? Like, there's, like, a lot of dark humor, like, in all of his movies, right?
Like, yeah, like, I mean, yeah, like, black, like, Showgirls, Total Recall, RoboCop, like, there's always some weird stuff going on with his films. But this one's, like, finally, like, he actually made a... He didn't just make like a good genre film. This is him making a good film. He took something incredibly taboo and it's basically got widespread acclaim, which I find interesting when you take something this messed up and then everyone loves it.
Sure. Sure. Wow. That's man. Honestly, this is like the first movie tonight where it's like, I don't know if I want to see. Like, it just sounds super intense.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, I want to watch it though. Like, I think, like, The Lobster. I mean, that's one of the most bleak films I've ever.
Oh yeah.
Watch, yeah. But I also laughed my ass off.
Yeah, yeah. I think
so. I wonder if this is kind of in the same, you know, has the same DNA.
I think I'm gonna watch it, but I'm gonna make sure I have a very strong drink in hand, like. It's going to get, like, super intense, I feel like, during some scenes. So I'm just, like, I'm going to make sure I have, like, a very strong drink. To kind
yeah,
of...
I would. Yeah.
Well, that's how you watch every movie, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Didn't you send me something the other day where you're, like, there's a beer sport? And I'm, like, I need to go into training. And you're, like, you already are.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Sure. Okay. Let's see.
This movie's so good, I might watch it without a drink.
Yeah, yeah. I think we have time for one more movie, or we could do like a bunch of quick hits if you want to do that.
It's your topic. What do you want to do?
Well, let's see. I'm going through the list. You know what? Let's do like a bunch of quick hits.
I have two.
Okay. We'll do your two.
Okay. Patterson.
Oh, the Jim Jarmusch movie.
Jim Jarmusch.
It's a movie
Adam
that,
Driver.
Yeah.
A guy named Patterson living in a town called Patterson writing poetry and drinking one beer a night and listening to conversations. But Jim Jarmusch is amazing. Coffee and cigarettes, broken flowers, only lovers left alive. It's basically going to be like the hipster movie that everyone loves in 10 years.
Sure.
And then there's a movie called A Bigger Splash that stars Tilda Swinton as like a David Bowie-esque rock star reunited with her ex, Ralph Fiennes, on this like beautiful island. So you have these amazing actors, you know, these basically rich white people making each other miserable.
Sounds wonderful.
But good acting, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are my two.
Yeah, I definitely want to see those movies. Let's see what. Let's see. I didn't see Sully.
Oh man, best mustaches 2016.
Really? Over Everybody Wants Them?
Oh yeah, dude. Aaron Eckhart's looked like it could like break off of his face, and like you know, it could have defeated Germany in 1945.
Like it. That also could have landed on the Hudson.
Yeah, like the plane. Like if he could have strapped it to the top of the plane, it would have just like glided it.
Sure.
But it's very good. Tom Hanks is so good in Sully that I don't think people know how good he is.
Right. No, I mean, I'm a huge Tom Hanks fan. I always look forward to his performances. So I definitely got to watch Sully.
You know,
Hacksaw Ridge.
Tom Hanks spelled backwards is Mott Scan.
Oh, wow.
Scan? Wait, Tom Hanks. Never mind.
Hacksaw Ridge was another big one that
very good.
Really? Okay. Let's see. There's like a little, you know, I think the biggest takeaway here is that the biggest hitters of 2016 were the smaller movies, like we mentioned in the beginning of the podcast. The you know, you had like the big tentpole movies that came out, like Jungle Book, Civil War, Doctor Strange. Obviously Rogue One, but like, I feel like, you know, it just, the indie movies just kind of really took top billing last year.
Yeah, dude, crushed it. Hunt for the Wilder People, Love and Friendship, Love and Friendship, Love and Friendship, Love and Friendship.
And Love and Friendship.
Everybody Wants Some.
Yeah.
Hush, The Witch. There's some legit indies. Moonlight.
Sure. Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how 2017 plays out, because there's a lot of big tentpole movies coming out. You always hear about the big tentpole movies. Obviously, like the little indie movies, you don't hear about until like, you know, after they left theaters. You know.
Yeah, and like, you know, Guardians is coming out this year. Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, you know, XXX, the Return of Xander Cage.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how hip I am to, you know, I don't know. It's going to be a big blockbuster year, the new Star Wars. But I don't know too many indies that are coming out, do you?
No, and you know what? We're probably going to talk about those on the best movies of 2017 that we didn't see.
I'm in.
Yeah. So I've got a lot of catching up to do still. Mark, you have a lot of catching up to do still. I'm not even going to think about all the TV shows I still have to catch up with.
Jeez Louise.
How do people have time to like watch all these things? It's crazy.
I'm jealous.
It's like, do you not have a job? Do you not have something to do during the day?
Are you really good with your time?
Yeah. It's like they have it timed to like the second. So, all right. I think that does it for a podcast. Obviously, there were like a lot more movies that we didn't see in 2016, but there's just so much time in a podcast. I'm sure there's a lot of podcasts that you haven't listened to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We could do a podcast on that.
Let's not. Okay. Any plugs you want to make before we sign off?
Yeah, Shark Dropper.
Movies, Films, and Flicks. Rotten Tomatoes.
The Lamb.
Domino's for being awesome.
Doritos.
Mountain Dew. Let's see. Ben Gay.
Gummy Bears.
Yeah.
Code Red.
Okay. I think that's enough plugs. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that does it for a podcast. For my hosts, for my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
The Handmaiden.
I've been your host, John Lawson. Thank you so much for listening, and see you guys soon.
Target. T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.